This evening, the American Forum presents another timely transcribed discussion of importance to you. The subject, how far should government reorganization go? Our speakers today are Commissioner Homer Ferguson of the Hoover Commission, Special Assistant to the Department of Defense, and former Republican Senator from Michigan, and Representative Chet Holifield, Democrat of California, member of the Hoover Commission, the House Government Operations Committee, and the Joint Atomic Energy Committee. We'll begin our discussion after this important message. Every time a cold snap hits a particular section of the country, the local fire departments in that area get ready for a rash of house fires. They know from experience that low temperatures usually bring a high number of emergency calls, most often from houses where stoves and furnaces or small room heaters become overheated and ignite nearby clothing, trash, or other inflammable material. And quite frequently, they start when people decide to burn a little wood in the fireplace to take the chill out of the air. The trouble begins when the fire is allowed to get too big, or where the protective screen isn't put in place to guard against flying sparks. And again, many fires are caused by faulty electric heaters and by overloaded circuits. Fire and electricity are dangerous any time, but especially when the weather turns cold. So be careful. Never gamble with fire. The odds are against you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the American Forum. And here is your moderator, Stephen McCormick.
One of the campaign cries of 1952 by both parties was economy in government. In April 1953, the Second Hoover Commission was established to initiate this movement toward greater economy in the executive branch of our government. This month, the first report was released on personnel and civil service. And it will be followed by 19 additional reports, many of which promise to be controversial. Today we have two outstanding men from the Hoover Commission to discuss these reports. So let's begin now with a question from Mr. Sharon.
Commissioner Ferguson, the task force which studied the Civil Service Commission, the civil service status of the government today, which was headed by President Dawes of Princeton, urged that an official inquiry without delay be made into the government's personnel security program. Why didn't the Hoover Commission buy that recommendation?
Well, I think one of the reasons, and principally the principal reason as I saw it, was that this matter had been studied by the executive branch, the previous administration as well as the present administration. It had also been studied by the various committees in Congress. When I was on the investigating committee there in the Senate, we studied this problem. Now, no one claims that it is perfect, but I think that it must be studied from the working level of those who are operating it inside and those who are familiar with it. This field of security is no place for amateurs, and therefore, I think it's essential that it received the attention of those inside. Now, one other thing I think is important, that if you'd start another study of it by an outside commission, you would delay it from its actual work inside. That is, they would all say, well, we'll wait till this commission gets through, and then we'll go back to work. And this isn't a program that you can delay.
Congressman Holifield, is that how you see it, sir?
Well, I find myself in complete disagreement with my respected colleague. I believe that a study of the personnel and civil service careers of the 2 million government employees cannot possibly be made in its entirety without studying this very important matter, which is affecting the morale, in my opinion, of hundreds of thousands of federal employees. I think it was inexcusable for them to fail to study this field.
Mr. Bertain.
Congressman Holifield, I believe that the Department of Justice under Mr. Tompkins just completed a survey of the security problem within the executive department. And I was wondering whether you were familiar with that survey.
I'm certainly not familiar with the results of it, but I would not set the administration up to investigate its own security program. It would not be an objective investigation, in my opinion.
Would
it should be investigated from someone outside the administration.
Another committee, sir?
Another committee? Or this commission was instructed and had the jurisdiction to go into all facets of the personnel problem. This is an important facet which it missed.
Mr. Krebs.
Commissioner Ferguson, you raised, as I got them, three objections to another study of the security program by the Hoover Commission. Yet all of those reasons were apparently available to President Dodds and his task force when they made the recommendation that the Hoover Commission make the study. Now, does that mean that the Commission has repudiated its own task force?
Well, now, I want it known, and it should be known, that the Hoover Commission, while it appointed these task force to do these jobs, and they've done splendid work on a number of occasions, the Commission does not agree and follow all of the recommendations of the task force. The task force is to try and get the facts for us and make their recommendations to the Commission, and then the Commission proceeds to make its recommendations.
Well, since they, on the basis of that study, came to a conclusion in favor of the security investigation by the Commission must have had very good reasons for repudiating.
It did have, and I feel they were justified. As I say, the fact that a study should be made, I think it can be made from the inside. I think, as mentioned by Mr. Burton, that a study by the man in charge in the Attorney General's office will be able to work this out and do a much better job than would be done by a commission, because it would take months of study. And if you had amateurs on it that knew nothing about the penetration of communists into government and into business, you wouldn't get a study that would be of any value.
But Commissioner
Hazel Markell, go ahead.
I'd like to ask Congressman Holifield, in view of the fact that you think that the Hoover Commission should have acted on this security problem, does that mean that you would do away with the boards and commissions, the congressional committees and so forth that is doing the same investigation?
Oh, no, and I want to clarify my statement. I said that the task force, which was assigned to study the personnel and civil service problems, should have made the investigation and turned their recommendations over to the Hoover Commission so we could have acted upon their study, but they failed to study it. So it's a field that has not been studied by either the task force or the Hoover Commission. We, as commission members, only take the studies that have been made by task forces set up to do the groundwork, you might say.
But it's your opinion that this particular task force would do a better job, is it, than, we'll say, the Justice Department, the Tompkins Committee, possibly a committee in Congress, the various and sundry investigative bodies that are already set up?
Not necessarily, but if there is any value to task force studies, a task force of competent men could have been assigned to do this part of the very important part of the whole personnel structure of government.
Mr. Hill.
Representative Holifield, do you think that we actually achieve any goal by these series of studies through Congress, through executive order, through repeated commissions? Are we making any headway if there is a security problem in this repetitiousness and duplication of effort? Or shouldn't we, in terms of economy and efficiency in the program, be reducing it to a single report such as the Tompkins Committee should produce sometime this week?
Well, as to which commission should do the job, I'm not competent to say. But I say that the task force on the Hoover Commission was assigned a job study on personnel and civil service, and they spent several thousands of dollars doing it, and they left outside of their study one of the most important factors.
Well, I think the reason that they did leave it out, that it's a subject that would have had to have men on that task force that understood communism, that understood the penetration of communism into government and the infiltration of them, and that's why they didn't make this study. It must be made by experts, in my opinion. I think I've investigated communism in the Senate as much as anyone, and I have still a lot to learn about how they penetrate. And we studied this very program at one time and issued a report. The executive at that time didn't follow all of the things that we suggested. Now, I think this subject, personally, I think, has been really studied to death. That's what's wrong with it.
Mr. Sharon.
Well, I would disagree with you there, Commissioner, but I would like to ask you a question. You seem to advocate that the Justice Department should conduct the investigation of the security program. Just how objective do you feel such an investigation would be, inasmuch as the present security program was made up with the help of the Justice Department and has found to be inadequate?
Well, now, I think that the people that are working in a subject, on a subject, like the courts, when I was a judge, the fact of going into perfecting pleadings, perfecting grand jury proceedings, can be done much better by the courts that are doing the work than it is to appoint some laymen, as I called them in the beginning here, amateurs, to go into this study. Sure, there will be miscarriages of justice. I recall, and you will recall, that every time a man is indicted and acquitted, there has been something wrong. Let's say that he should never have been indicted. But we don't throw out the system, and we don't start to study it over again by outside people because now and then a man is acquitted in court.
Why do you think the task force recommended that this inquiry be made?
Only from what they said. But they didn't make it, and therefore we didn't file a report on it.
Congressman Hollifield.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferguson's argument that we need to get experts to make a study on of a task force matter would disqualify by inference all the task forces, because all of the task forces are supposed to have been selected by Mr. Hoover on the basis of expert men qualified to study the subject under discussion. The subject under discussion was personnel and civil service employees of the government. This is an important facet of that problem. It was not studied.
But it is a specialized part of personnel. Men who are trained in civil service and in all of the personnel problems might know nothing about this question of penetration of communism in the government.
Well, there's more than just a question.
Hold it, Mr. Sharon. Let's go over to Mr. Pertain here for a moment.
Why, for instance, Congressman Hollifield, did you dissent in regards to the task force, their recommendations for the senior civil service proposals?
Well, I'll be very glad to go into that. The establishment of a top corps of senior civil service people, what I would call an elite corps of civil service employees, has many disadvantages, in my opinion. In the first place, it gives to a group of high-salaried men in civil service bumping rights over the career people in all the departments of government. They can be shifted around from one department to another. Now, the fact that they have a high personal rank, that they're given a high personal rank, does not necessarily qualify them for every department of government. A man who has spent 15 years in the State Department might be a very poor man, although occupying a high grade to send over into the Labor Department or into the Agricultural Department. And that's what this top corps means. It gives them bumping rights. It gives them a year's unemployment compensation at higher pay, and they're supposed, incidentally, to be political eunuchs, and there is no such thing in the federal government, because every man must of necessity have some political feeling. If he doesn't have, he hasn't much business in government, and there's other disadvantages.
Representative Hollifield, as I understand it, what you're really saying is that these men shouldn't be shifted from job to job because they have no particular competence, and that leads me to another phase of it, in that you have also dissented from the enlargement of Schedule C and the political advisors to the president. Do I take it then that it follows from your position that you would ask career people to go onto the Hill and before Congress to defend the activities of the particular administration in power? Or shouldn't they, in fact, have political advisors politically appointed and outside of civil service?
The heads of the departments and their assistants who are not under civil service are supposed to defend the policies of each administration. They can call upon professional help from career people on any subject with which they are not acquainted, for statistics, for procedures, for rules and regulations with which they are not familiar. This type of testimony can be given to congressional committees and is given to congressional committees every day without any political reprisal upon the individual, as long as he expresses facts and backs up his subordinates with the information that is asked for.
Now, you say that...
Well, hold it, Mr. Hill. Let's go over here to Hazel Markell for a moment.
I wonder if I could change the subject for just a moment. Uh-huh. On account of time, I'd like to get this question in. I know that there is a report from a task force due on the power question, water resources and power. Has that report been made to the committee, Commissioner Ferguson?
Not yet.
And when do you expect it?
I couldn't give you the time, but it'll be only a short time. It's about completed.
Do you think this
Mr. Sharon,
this subject will go into the Dixon Yates contract at all, Commissioner?
I haven't any idea whether they studied that particular contract.
Congressman Hollifield, do you think that it would be valuable to the country at large to have a more thorough investigation of the Dixon Yates contract than we've so far had.
Well, it would be valuable to the country at large to find out some of the issues, which unfortunately have not been printed by the papers. And if the study of power resources could obtain that result, I would be in favor of it.
Well, in other words, the congressman says that the committees up on the Hill that have been studying this haven't made a good job of it. Now, I think that most of those facts have been brought out by the committee.
Well, didn't the committee... Commissioner, didn't the committee halt the public hearings rather suddenly before all the key witnesses had an opportunity to be heard?
Not that I know of. They're still in power now. They can investigate if they want to.
Congressman
Hollifield.
The former Joint Committee on Atomic Energy stopped the investigation before a list of very important witnesses were heard. Men like the Tennessee Valley Authority Board, men like the Corps of Engineers that were all involved in this. Men from these different corporations who participated, from the private utility corporations such as Ebasco and the First Corporation of Boston and a few other corporations that helped prepare this scheme, never had an opportunity to appear before the committee last year.
I wonder whether we couldn't get back to this senior civil service proposal that the congressman objected to. I'd like to take the side.
Go ahead, Senator.
If I could, on behalf of the commission, the majority of the commission found that this was a good thing. I'd like to just take a few moments to explain what they had in mind. In giving the senior civil service a status in this whole procedure, it was to take those at the top from the 15th grade up to 18. And they would be specialists. And any department or any agency that needed a specialist for a short time would call upon the commission to get a specialized man to do a job. Now, for instance, one thing that is in common in many of the agencies is this question of manpower. Another one is commodity specialists. Another one is administrators. Let me give one hypothetical case. Suppose that the government was going to open an office in San Francisco, is just taking a city, and it's an important office. They'd send a man who would say an 18, one of these highly specialized men that understood how to open an office and organize it. Now, as soon as he would get it organized, then a man in the 14th grade could operate it. And the same thing may be true if they were going to close an office. So that these highly specialized men who are specialized as individuals rather than just qualified by a job assignment, that they would be able to render service to the government. Now, this is big business that we're talking about when we're talking about government.
Well, Commissioner...
We need these specialized men to go from one place to another to actually help us organize and operate government.
Mr. Bertain has a question.
There is also an added consideration, and that pertains to the non-career executives. What is their roles particularly supposed to be, and what is the confusion between the non-career executives and the civil service people?
The non-career executives are on a lower level than the career service. They are actually political appointees, drawn from outside of Washington, brought here, and the commission recommended that they be trained at taxpayers' expense.
And you object that
they
to that,
serve?
Sir?
Why, certainly. They serve as political executives. That was the first name given to them, and then they were given the name of non-career executives. And, of course, this is just a way of giving the Republican administration a great many more political jobs.
Precisely.
That's all it amounts to.
Well, of course, you just had 20 years in which to get your political jobs, and I just want to say this now. I'd like to start at the beginning of our government. We have a two-party system. Therefore, we have in mind that the party in power is supposed to carry out certain policies and certain programs. Those are political jobs under our system. Now, if you don't make them political jobs, then you are not going to have carried out
any program or any policy.
In other words,
and I would say to the people of the United States, if they're going to have no politicians in office, then there's no use of having an election. What could the President of the United States do if he couldn't change any personnel? The people might as well say, well, there's nothing we can do. We must...
That, of course, counted 755 jobs of a political decision-making character. Now, isn't that sufficient patronage for Mr. Eisenhower's administration?
Well, now, it all depends. Up until this day, there has been nothing by which you could say, no rules, no way to determine who was a political officer and who was not. I think that what we need in America are good, trained men in public life. There's too many men who think they can do a job in politics, and it's not just like business. I've been in politics for 26 years, and it isn't business. It is a profession. And if you want men at the top, they must understand politics. And I think the two-party system can't function unless you're going to have these political appointments.
I'd like to reply to that. In the first place, the 755 people that the task force estimated have policy-making positions, in my opinion, can make the policy for every department. You divide the number of departments we have up into the 755, and you'll find out you have quite a core of policy-making people. These are not subject to civil service law. They're subject to appointment by the president and by the heads of his cabinet. Now, if they can't get over the policies of the administration, why should we double the number to get over the policies of the administration? And if you can't draw the line between policy and career, how would making an additional 1,500 people help you solve the problem of dividing between policy and career service?
But I think that when you have 3,347,000, I forget the last three figures, of people, that you've got to have policy-making people among those. Nobody can say that it ought to be 750,000 or it ought to be 750, but I think you've got to say that anyone who makes policy, anyone who determines what a program is to be, is a policy-making person, and he should not be a career man.
Let's
go over here to Hazel Markell.
This is something that disturbs me just slightly, Commissioner Ferguson. The fact that you set up sort of, as it were, an elite corps, yes, and we're hearing a great deal of talk about the morale of government workers at the time. Do you think this is going to have an effect on that?
Yes, it's going to increase it.
Increase the morale?
Yes, because here's what it's going to do. Explain this. Everybody down below has an opportunity, through service to his government and his people, to work up and to be put into this senior category, which is really a good thing, and it would raise the morale. If I was a civil service today, my ambition would be to do such a good job that someday I would be in this senior corps of public service.
As long, that is, Senator, if, as long as the Republican administration were in power.
Why, no, but if the Democrats are in, they would use the same system.
You would like
not necessarily. Remember this, that also there is recommended to be set up a personnel board for this senior group. They have the right to evaluate the work of these men and, quote, select them out, end of quote. In other words, get rid of them. So getting into this particular group with a partisan board appointed by either the present president or a succeeding president would leave these men open for discharge, in my opinion.
Well, now, do we say in government that no man can be discharged no matter how inefficient, or let's even say how stupid he may become? It may be that he's unable to carry out the job. Shouldn't we have a board who would determine whether or not a man was any longer capable of carrying
out his job.
They're already selected and put into this senior group on the basis of ability.
Yes,
but the same group has the right to select them out. But so it means that they wouldn't have permanent civil service.
Well, but some men lose their ability. That is a known fact. Some men just simply lose their ability to do a job. And can't we get rid of it?
Well,
Mr. Krebs, do you have a question, sir?
Well, I was just going to pass to Mr. Sharon because I know he has one.
All right.
Well, you flatter me, sir. I just can't help being a layman that thinking that this all is just a means of some sort to create more patronage for the Republican National Committee. And as a man in the street who reads the newspapers and listens to the arguments that you've presented, Commissioner, I can't help but think that this is a move to get greater political patronage into the civil service.
Right,
and I know that the American people...
I just want to answer that by saying that if a man on the street, the man who reads the newspaper, will look at the history of this government and as to whether or not he wants his vote to count, whether or not he wants to be able to change presidents and administrations, that he'd better think about changing those who make policy and programs. Because when a platform is put up, the people ought to think that if they elect that particular platform to become their government, that it can be put into effect. Just think of Mrs. Hobby. When she became the cabinet officer, she had the right to remove only one person. That was her private secretary. Now, how could she put anything into effect if she was only able to remove one person? They've got to think that this is a two-party system and that it is a political government after all, and that they must operate under that, and they can, as the saying goes, kick the rascals out if they desire to.
I wish we could continue, gentlemen, but
it's
time to end today's discussion. We certainly do thank you, gentlemen, Congressman Chet Hollifield, Democrat of California, and Commissioner Homer Ferguson of the Hoover Commission. Thank you very much. Thanks to Hazel Markell and you gentlemen of the panel. The nation's first discussion program, The American Forum, is now in its 26th year, founded and produced by Theodore Granick. This is Steve McCormick bidding you goodbye.
In most parts of the country, cold weather will be with us for a little while yet. And for that reason, I'd like to pass along a few motoring suggestions to help bring you safely through the winter. When you first start out in your car, try your brakes before getting into traffic. You can't always see ice, you know, and if you find the road slippery, we shouldn't have to tell you to drive slowly. Then, while driving, keep your windshield clear of ice, snow, fog, and frost at all times. Be sure your taillights, headlights, windshield wipers, and defrosters are in top-notch condition. Remember, in order to avoid danger, you must be able to see it. Use tire chains on snow or ice, but don't get into a false feeling of security because you are using them. Never jam on your brakes. It can throw you into a dangerous spin. For safety's sake, be a courteous driver, and most important of all, stay within the speed limit. The life you save may be your own. For reprints of today's discussion on the American Forum, send 10 cents to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington 18, D.C. America's oldest, unrehearsed discussion program is dedicated to the public debate of all sides of all issues vital to you and your country. The American Forum is produced by its founder, Theodore Granick, and directed for NBC Radio by Everett Sevier. This is Ray Quinn speaking. This program came to you transcribed from Washington. Federal Civil Defense Administrator Val Peterson will meet the press tonight on the NBC Radio Network.